Happy Friday. This is Trevin McGee with the Scene Stealers podcast, and I'm here with Trey Hawk.
Hey!
And a brand new one. We got a new guy this week. Scene Stealers contributor, Adam Brumback.
Hey.
That's the enthusiasm we were looking for.
It's Friday!
We've got a whopping two movies to talk about today. Trey and Adam are going to tell me all about
Sound of My Voice,
right?
Yes.
And then I'm going to talk about Men in Black 3. So
awesome. You want to just start it off? I want to hear about this Men in Black 3.
I know. 3. I'm more excited about that than The Sound of My Voice.
All right. Well, the thing, Men in Black 3, I don't really know why it exists. Like, it is only slightly... less
ringing endorsement.
It's only slightly less unnecessary than Battleship, you know?
Battleship.
Only slightly less necessary?
Unnecessary.
Oh, okay.
Less,
it's a little more necessary. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But I didn't want to say that Men in Black is necessary, because I don't want someone to take that out of context and put that on a poster, because that's what they would do with this podcast.
I don't even actually remember Men in Black 2 at all.
I don't either. And in fact, I don't even remember, I don't even know if I saw it. Come to think of it, I could have completely missed it. But that's kind of the point. The first Men in Black, it's kind of nice to know, and just kind of quaint by comparison at this point. But the first Men in Black was the highest grossing summer movie of 1997. It was huge, huge movie. And this movie just feels like just a total sequel that happened like 2 years later instead of, you know, 15 years later.
Yeah.
It's got all the familiar faces. You know, Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones are back. Rip Torn is not. I was kind of hoping for more Rip Torn, but no such luck. Behind the camera, you got Barry Sonnenfeld again. Ethan Coen wrote it. Not Ethan, but Ethan, or Eton, however you want to pronounce it. He wrote it, and the only real additions, you've got Jermaine Clement as the from Flight of the Conchords. He plays this bad guy, and Josh Brolin as a younger Tommy
K
Lee Jones, a young K. It's just kind of, I mean, it sounds really condescending, but it's just kind of quaint by comparison. You know, it reminds me of, you know, in 1997, all you needed for a big summer movie. You needed a charismatic star with a catchphrase and a few CG effects, and that would win you the summer. And now it's, you know, you need a movie with a toy line, and it needs to be in IMAX and in 3D, and there's got to be a viral campaign and a build-up and, you know, like all this kind of stuff. It's if you look at how this movie launched, it's relatively timid by comparison. And, you know, it's just really familiar territory, and it picks right up where the characters left off. It doesn't... The amount of time has passed is real time, so they've been partners for 15 years, but it's still, you know, they still don't get along. They still, you know, Kay's gruff and old and listens to country music, and despite being almost 50, Will Smith is...
hip and young.
Hip and young, but, you know, like, still a man boy. Like, they cut to him at one point in his personal life, and he's just hanging out at home playing video games, and, you know, he's just... like a man child.
Yeah.
So there, you know, like, I don't need character development in, you know, a Men in Black movie. I'm not trying to chastise it for that, but it feels so familiar and just, you know,
like there's no growth in the characters.
There's no anything. I don't know. It's just the exact same thing over again, except 15 years later. You know, like I wish I had more to say about it than that, but it's, you know, like the Jermaine Clement is, you know, hiding under about 10 pounds of makeup and prosthesis, and his character is played completely serious, so there's not any real room for his brand of humor or anything that he can bring to it. There's no improvisation. It's pretty stiff. And, yeah, the only joke I really enjoyed was a one-off sight gag that just kind of comes and goes. But when Jay travels back in time, when he goes to the Men in Black headquarters in the 60s, all of the spacemen and all of the aliens look like B-movie spacemen and aliens. And I thought that was just kind of a funny nod, but they don't even acknowledge it. You just kind of see it in the background and it's gone.
Yeah, that's even better.
Yeah. And so, you know, I wanted more cleverness like that. There just wasn't any. And I remember the first film being more fun and just kind of, you know, like taking shots at, you know, friendly shots at celebrities, things like that. You know, they were monitoring known alien life on Earth, and there's that computer screen that's got like Steven Spielberg and Sylvester Stallone, just all these celebrities on it. I thought that was a really funny joke in the original. And they kind of do that in this one, but there's just nothing like that. There aren't any cameos or anyone. They have a lot of just weird bit roles that could have been filled by clever cameos or funnier characters that would have actually brought a little more to the movie. But the actors I mentioned are the only major stars or major points in the whole film.
Was the story good enough to keep you engaged?
It's not. The thing is, it's not bad. Like it's not intelligence insulting. It's pretty predictable, but it leads to a pretty satisfying conclusion. Mm-hmm. But you know, again, it's not anything to really, you know, write home about. It's not inspiring or anything, or inspired. Coen's script doesn't really take the characters in any new direction or have any fun with the genre or the world that they kind of built with the first two movies. It's just kind of there.
I feel like it may actually, based on just, I guess, my age and how old I was when the very first one came out, I'm extremely excited to see it. When I very first heard that there was going to be a third Men in Black, I was like immediately on Twitter, you know, like, new Men in Black, that's great. It was 97, so I was 7, and I loved it, the first one. And now I feel like whether or not there is any huge changes, I'll still probably enjoy watching it just because it'll be almost like nostalgic watching it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I watched it with the age range was pretty diverse, pretty broad, and you could definitely tell the people who'd seen the first few at different points in their life and what they thought of it. I mean, you know, younger people liked it a little bit more, but then also if people who kind of grew up or had Will Smith blockbusters to kind of, you know, look forward to during summer movies, like those people got a lot out of it too. It was just kind of nice to see Will Smith in a big, you know, summer role that wasn't Hancock. So, I don't know.
Do you think this movie suffers from where it got placed in the summer? Like, this seems like it would be a perfect film for, like, early August, when everybody's just sort of, you know, almost worn out because they've just been, you know, just bashed and exploded.
And that's one of the nice things about this, too. I remember reading reviews about Raiders of the Lost Ark when it first came out, and we're like, you know, the pace is a little breakneck, but if you hang in there, you know, it's really satisfying. I remember reading that and thinking, like, wait, really? I mean, it's one of the best paced action movies I've ever seen.
Sure.
And, you know, then years later, it looks great, and you compare it to movies, you know, that have come out since then and been so breakneck that it looks timid by comparison. And by the same token, you know, like, this movie feels very much like the original, and it should, because everyone from the original is involved. But that also means that, you know, it's a little more... The pacing is a little bit easier to digest. It's not 3 hours long. It's not a giant, you know, like product placement. I mean, it kind of is. I mean, it's got to be because it's a summer movie. But you know, you're not just being inundated with it. And so, yeah, you know, you're kind of right. I think if they'd put it towards the end of the schedule instead of just right here before the big June movies come out, you know, it might stand a better chance. But you know, it's kind of hard to tell. I don't even know if it'll win the weekend. I think it probably will. Avengers has been out long enough that it'll probably get, you know, like overtaken. But
people need that next fix.
I think so, but man, I don't know. It's just
especially
kind of
if it's slightly comedic.
Yeah. And that helps. And the 3D is actually it's not poorly done, but it's not. It's very subtle, and you can definitely tell a difference when the glasses are off compared to when they're on. Like it's obvious they shot the whole thing in 3D, and so that works out a lot better.
Sonnenfeld was a cinematographer.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, and he still knows his way around a shot, and that's very evident. I really liked how the conclusion built up in the big scene. You know, it's obviously driving towards a big scene. I liked how the big conclusion worked out and where it takes place. That was well done and a nice little piece of history. But you know, overall, I just wanted more out of it than I got, and it just felt so familiar. I didn't, you know, you can just watch the original and get the same thing out of it, except not in 3D. That's kind of how it felt.
So, what's your bottom line?
I got to give it a rock fist, a minor rock fist down.
Minor rock fist
I mean, it just didn't do enough. It's kind of unfair to lump it in the same minor rock fist as Battleship. You know, Battleship is a much worse movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just didn't do enough right for me to say, you know, there were a lot of things wrong with it, but it did this thing right. Nothing about it really stands out as being, you know, like, there's no diamond in the rough here. It's just, you know, you don't have to worry about, there's not a syringe in the rough either. So,
sure.
You know, you're okay. So, I don't know. I feel like I've said everything I can say about that.
No more about Men in Black 3?
I mean, you guys can ask. There's no Will Smith song. There's no sweet musical number.
Not even,
I know.
What about Men in Black? Is it not even recycled at all?
No, they don't. I think it does end with, because I love it. One of my favorite things about 80s movies, when the closing credits theme song is titled the same as the movie and then just sums up what the movie is about.
Yeah.
And there is a song that pretty much does that, where a guy just kind of raps about the Men in Black and how you got Jay and how you got Kay and how they're, you know, they don't get along and they're, you know, like all that. That was pretty funny. Oh, and the best thing I can say about it for sure is Josh Brolin's Tommy Lee Jones impression is incredible. Like it's so good. It just feels like a young version of him. I mean,
nice.
His looks, his mannerisms, everything like that was, eerie. I mean, beyond uncanny how well done that was. So that was easily my favorite thing about the movie. And they don't milk it. That's the best part. Is it's not just, you know, you're not hit over the head with it. It's so good that it just kind of blends in the background, and they're able to move on and tell a story and not just fall back on that joke a dozen times throughout the course of the movie. So that's easily the best thing about it. So why don't you guys tell me now about this Sound of My Voice movie I've been hearing all about.
Well, Adam and I got to see Sound of My Voice.
Mm-hmm.
It premiered at Sundance in 2011 and was made by the same group of artists who made Another Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the main actress's name is, but do you have the IMDb?
Yeah. I've got Nicole Vesius.
Nope, not that one.
Britt Marling?
Nope. It's the blonde.
Yeah, both of those were blondes.
Do you have Another Earth or Sound of My Voice up?
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got Sound of My Voice up.
Yeah, Sound of My Voice. Look under the writer.
Britt Marling.
Oh, Britt Marley. Yes.
Yeah, Marling, like Jackie Marling.
Yes. She wrote or co-wrote both of those, both Another Earth and Sound of My Voice, and then also was the main actress in both of them. So, same group, both films premiered at Sundance 2011, went on to South by Southwest in 2011. Both did very well, and both were picked up by Fox Searchlight. Fox Searchlight promoted Another Earth last year and is promoting Sound of My Voice this year. And I'm trying to think of a way to talk around this one without giving away too much, because we will have to put up the spoiler marker.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like really the film itself didn't give away too much throughout the entire thing. You were always
there's stuff that unfolds that's really satisfying as it unfolds. That I think this would hold up to repeat viewings.
I think it's definitely worth
repeat viewings. But it's one of those things of, you know, it is one of those movies, the first time you see it, as that stuff unfolds, it is really exciting. I agree with you. I don't think there are any full spoiler.
But I think definitely to watch it a second time, the ending just wouldn't be as powerful at all.
I don't know. I keep going back and forth. All right. But basic setup is two post-college age, you know, late 20s-ish.
Kind of like post-hipster, like, kind of were popular, and now they're not really doing a lot.
Yeah, they can't fit into their skinny jeans anymore.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
But anyway, yeah, and they're transitioning to adulthood, and they're trying to kind of find... They're trying to find their own voice as artists. Both of them are kind of dealing with dead-end jobs and parental overhang and stuff like that. And so they decide that they're going to make a foray into investigative journalism. And they decide to infiltrate this cult that is led by a woman
from the future
who claims to be from the future.
Okay. I saw that. Like, is this like the time traveler's wife?
It is exactly like the time traveler's wife.
I'm in.
So I'm in. Yes.
And then it's about them kind of fighting over whether or not it's true.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are questions that abound throughout this. Is she from the future? Is she not from the future? Is this just a charismatic cult leader? What does she want? What is she trying to gain? Mm-hmm. Those types of questions. And I would say that the most successful thing about the script is that there is never a real definitive answer to any of those questions.
Ooh, that in itself is kind of a spoiler.
All right, well, then spoiler 2 minutes ago.
All right.
Spoiler.
That spoiler goes back in time.
All right, so yeah, let's put up the spoiler flag then.
We've got the brief synopsis. Two would-be journalists try and infiltrate a cult led by someone from the future.
Sure, and there are lots of questions, and who knows if we get answers.
Okay, well.
All right, so spoiler.
Spoiler dome is officially up. So yep. From
all right,
here on
so
out,
we can talk about anything.
Talk about whatever you want. Like, is she from the future, for example?
We really don't know. I mean, that's the lovely thing, I think, about the script itself. Mm-hmm. Is that it does, and I think we can make, you know, Adam may have his own theories, and we could argue plot until the cows come home. But one of the lovely things about this script in particular is that it layers in a ton of information. None of it red herrings, all of it folding back into the story itself. Yeah. But where you could go, oh, well, no, she can't be from the future because of this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And then somebody's like, no, she's got to be from the future because of this, and this. Yeah.
Do you think she's from the future? Because I definitely have an opinion on that.
Go for it. Yeah. No.
I think that she is from the future.
Okay.
Lady.
And why?
I mean, I guess it's probably because they kind of hand it to you at the end. How far can we spoil it?
All the way.
Oh yeah, you can spoil it all the way. We put up the line in the scene. All right,
so
spoil
here's
it all the
line.
Way.
This
is a mega spoiler.
Throughout the movie, we have these kind of cutbacks to this girl that's in elementary school. Mm-hmm. The main male character is a substitute teacher.
Oh, okay.
One of his students is just totally weird and like narcoleptic and builds things with only black Legos and all this crazy stuff.
Wow.
That's
what they thought of.
At the middle,
it's actually really lovely because she doesn't talk the entire time.
Yeah, she's crazy. She's this crazy little kid.
Mm-hmm. I just like the black Lego touch.
Yeah, it was really strange.
The way it's shot is really nice.
So in the middle, the cult leader, I forget her name.
Maggie
asks our male lead to bring her.
I think it's Patrick.
To bring her the kid.
Peter.
Yeah. Asks Peter to bring her the kid that's in his class.
Bring me the child. Mm-hmm. Bring me the time child.
And this is the moment that either she is from the future or she's not. And why is she demanding this child?
Right.
Who eventually we find out that it's her mother.
It's her mother?
Ooh. Yeah. Maggie claims it is her mother.
Yeah, so it's not even just, oh, well, it's me or whatever. The moment that we know that she at least has been watching this girl is they share a secret handshake.
Oh.
And they've never met before. But that's at the very end.
Yeah.
So I feel like she knows the handshake that her mother taught her in the future. So she does the handshake with this child mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like that's just... That's got to mean that she's from the future.
Well, are you ready for me to reference a number of things? Because we do have the secret handshake that the cult employs, that the young child, when Maggie and the young child meet, they do know it.
Mm-hmm.
The young child is asked for. There are a number of things that Maggie references that are questionable but interesting. And make for a compelling argument for Maggie being from the future. I keep going back and forth. And here is my argument for Maggie being of our time and just being a sort of charismatic, interesting cult leader who is trying to deceive all of these people.
Okay.
I think the child is Maggie's child, who Maggie had while she was using drugs heavily, which we saw that she did during her flashbacks. And I think the old man that takes care of the child is Maggie's father, who may or may not be abusive, which there are a number of things. It's never outlined. And so I think the reason why the child knows this secret handshake is like a sense memory. It was something that when Maggie and this child were together early on, sometime when she was bouncing back and forth between the house and not being on the streets, had developed this handshake.
And you think the weirdness is because she's a crack baby?
Well, or that there's something, yeah, absolutely. Because there are hints.
She's definitely scarred in some way.
There's something going on. Either the it's obvious that a grandparent is the one taking care of her because of the dissonance in age between the young child and the person who is her caretaker. So it's obviously a grandparent. There is some scarring. And you assume or you think because it's never outlined. That's the thing. The direction in this film, who's the director?
Yeah, I was going to ask just because you've talked about how great the script is. What as a movie? How is the movie?
The direction is great.
Okay,
it's great. They employ some of what that DSLR filmmaking can do really well. Those shallow depths of field, but typically they'll employ those for flashbacks that occur when Maggie is telling stories about when she came to this time and stuff like that.
Right.
And so they'll cram that shallow depth of field in there, but it was to distinctly show that this is a flashback, this is a recollection, this is a memory, and so it looks like a distinct visual choice. But when you're in a room with people, you will most of the time have many of them in focus together.
Yeah.
You're seeing them as a group, and it is the surroundings. It is being in the basement of this house, which is just a suburban house in the valley,
right?
That gives you that sort of feeling of claustrophobia, but it's not a claustrophobia that psychologically isolates an individual. It psychologically isolates this whole group of people. And so I think that there are some very specific and very clear visual choices being made. Mm-hmm. And so, they're really trying to tell this story visually. Mm-hmm. And so I think the direction and the script work really well in tandem.
Okay.
Yeah, and the three main actors, Maggie, Peter, and Peter's girlfriend, I can't remember. But it's going to be Britt Marling or Marling.
Marling.
I can't remember Peter's, the actor who played Peter, but Peter and Peter's girlfriend. They're all really solid.
Okay.
Britt Marling is probably the best, and there's an ease to her performance that is in some ways unsettling, because you can never tell if she's just being honest and just like she's just kind of easy and carefree and this sort of bizarre futuristic hippie.
Or if she's got something that she's hiding.
Yeah.
Well, but all three of them are kind of like that. They're all sort of this soft-spoken trio that are, I mean, they're obviously being used to confuse you a little bit more, get you more invested in the story. And then all the secondary characters are the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody has baggage in this film. And I think that's the interesting thing about it. That's what's going to make this film something that people should go back to a second and third time. Because we can argue, like, plot points and story stuff like that in an interesting way with this film, not to sort of circumvent where it failed, but to discuss, like, is she from the future, is she not? And we could go back and forth on that. But the real interesting thing about this is it gets at when you don't know if you can really believe the other person who you're involved with in some way, shape, or form. And we could say that about Peter, about Peter's girlfriend, about Maggie. Mm-hmm. We could say that about any of the character. The psychology of trust and mistrust or distrust is totally at the heart of this film. Like, can we believe this person? Should we believe this person?
And you think it does a good enough job of creating that doubt and not hitting you over the head with it?
Yeah. Oh, I think so. I think so. It just lets it live there.
Because that's my biggest concern with movies like this, where you're supposed to decide. Kind of like, you know, you talked about your complaint to me. We never did it on the podcast, but just
take shelter.
Person to person, take shelter.
Yeah.
Yeah. The same thing, you know, it was just like when you eventually paint yourself into a corner like that, you kind of have to say, like, is this happening or isn't it?
Well, and that's kind of the problem that I was anticipating with this film is that, you know, any film where it's like, is this person just a crazy person? Is this person just a con artist?
Right.
Is this person actually from the future? And once you answer that question, whichever direction you have led us, whichever path you've led us down, you're either leading us down that path and then you solve it in the way that the path has led us, and then we're like, oh, I saw that coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
Or you totally dupe us and then you go, ha ha, they were crazy. They weren't just a visionary.
Yeah.
And we're like, ah. So either way you answer it, it's uncompelling.
Right.
There's something a little bit dissatisfying about that. But with this, they don't answer that question fully, and they don't answer it in what I think is a really satisfying way.
Yeah, at the end of it, I was sitting there, like, kind of yelling at the screen, like, no, no, like, I need it, I need the end.
Yeah.
Because it was, like, a half answer. And it was like you're saying, you know, they lead you down one path, and then they counteract it in a way that you just can't handle so quickly. Like, I definitely thought she was totally not from the future, and everything was a lie, and on and on and on. And then at the end, they make you think that she is, and my mind just exploded. And the ending is so fast that
it really
is so upset. Yeah.
Yeah, what's the runtime on this? How long does this movie go?
I think it's just about 2 hours, a little bit under, maybe.
It didn't linger. It was, and it didn't feel long either, but it was just extremely quiet the whole time.
And it's kind of a study in no budget or very low budget filmmaking. They do a ton with no money at all. I'd heard a couple of stories about ways they circumvented not having any money and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you can see it on the screen. They have one or two locations, only a handful of characters.
Yeah.
They focus fully on those characters. They compress their depth of fields at times when they're out in and around the city and stuff like that. So it really is I think it's a really clear lesson in how to make a lower no-budget film effectively. And I think the best lesson learned is you've got to focus on your script and your characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so down to brass tacks, what are you saying?
All right, Adam, I don't know that you've been... Have you been brought in on the rating system?
Teach me.
Okay, there are five options.
Okay.
There's Rock Fist Way Down, if it's just unbearable,
like,
and pains you.
Yeah, what have you given Way Down to?
Transformers, Judy Moody in the Not Bummer Summer.
Yeah. That summer was a bummer.
Warhorse. I gave Warhorse a Way Down. All right. Then there is Minor Rock Fist Down, which it's like, it's not good, but it didn't hurt you.
Okay.
Then there's Minor Rock Fist Up, which is...
Well, there's Swiss Fist.
There's
which
Swiss,
is like,
Swiss Fist,
like,
which is
neutral.
Totally neutral.
Okay.
And I think only two have ever been given, and I gave one of them. So
yeah. We try not to give Swiss Fists because, I mean... If you find yourself, like, if you find that the viewing experience totally ruins the movie for you, then that's probably a good application of the Swiss Fist.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you find yourself at a movie that you just are like, oh, I hate this genre and I didn't realize it was this, and you just kind of want to stay out of it, Swiss Fist could be appropriate.
Okay.
But we try not to give Swiss Fist. All right, so then there's Minor Rock Fist Up, which means you walked away happy. probably is not. It may not
there
be
were
terribly
problems,
memorable.
But overall, there was some. There were good enough elements that you know you'd watch it again. You wouldn't turn the channel if you saw it on TV.
Okay. Yeah, it's a slight recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah. Then there's Solid Rock Fist Up, which is basically a high recommendation. Uh-huh. It's like, no, I really enjoyed this. I'll probably watch it again. It probably requires a second viewing, yeah. And you highly recommend
it. It's like a 9 out of 10.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And then there's Rock Fist Way Up, which is as high as it gets.
Turning it up to 11.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
If it's The Godfather, it gets Rock Fist.
There Will Be Blood or The Godfather, it gets a Rock Fist Way Up.
Yeah. Or Drive. Drive got Rock Fist Way Up for me.
Yeah.
All right. So, what do you say?
You're making him go first.
I'll go first.
His inaugural Rock Fist.
Yeah. I don't want to jade his. I want him to be able to Rock Fist it. However,
okay.
He wants
that makes me nervous. It's like.
Do you want me to go first?
No, I'll go.
Okay.
So. I would say Solid Rock Fist Up.
All right.
I think I'm going to go Solid Rock Fist Up, too. This is a movie I definitely want to see again.
Yeah.
They layer in a ton of little tiny visuals that are really satisfying, and they don't belabor those points at all. And it's I think it's totally worth a second viewing. I would recommend it to people.
There were elements that I found out about in discussion that I didn't even notice. And then I was like,
yeah.
I guess I need to see that again because I just let myself go watching it, and I really really enjoyed this one.
Well, good.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I think we're both in agreement. Solid Rock Fist.
All right.
Awesome.
Everybody wins.
Well, except for you. Mine are Rock Fist down for Men in Black.
I got to watch Will Smith say, "Don't make me pimp slap the shiznit." Out of you to Andy Warhol. That's a thing that actually happens.
That
in that
sounds
movie.
Great.
That actually sounds lovely. And I bet Andy Warhol would really appreciate
it. It was Bill Hader disguised as Andy Warhol.
I am disappointed that they got rid of the Men in Black theme song though.
They cut that out.
That
there's
was
no
so good.
Yeah. And there's no talking pug dog either.
Dang.
Do they have the worms back?
Yeah, of course. They give a weird like they play the bagpipes at a funeral.
Yeah. That's actually great.
It would be, but it's just.
I am
surprised
that it's got a minor Rock Fist down.
I wish any of those jokes.
I'm gonna love it.
If any of those jokes had landed, I would have been like, "All right, yeah. It's good."
But I think I have the ability to turn off my like critique switch.
Yeah.
So I'll probably just watch this one and be like, "Oh yeah,
awesome."
Anyway, well, that's it. We had two, and there they are. So strong recommendation for Sound of My Voice. A minor, you know, not recommendation for Men in Black. Not that it matters, because everyone's going to go see it.
I'm still going to see it.
And that's it. So next week we'll be back with Mr. Moline. And what are we? Oh, Snow White and the Huntsman is next week.
I'm not
either. It's going to be Moline on that one.
Yeah, good luck,
so,
Eric.
Yeah, we've got that. And then you'll be seeing, are you seeing Lola Versus next week, or is next week Moonrise Kingdom?
No, those are not for a couple of weeks.
Oh, I thought there was something on Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, so we'll be back next week with Moline's review of Snow White and the Huntsman.
And we will stare at him.
And we will just look at him and wonder how I made it through. I'd go see it if I didn't.
Have you seen the short films that dude has done?
No.
They're terrible.
Really?
Oh, they're terrible.
Oh. I don't know.
Are you excited about Kristen Stewart?
I could care less about Kristen Stewart.
It's
Kristen Stewart. Really just. Yeah, no, I mean, I loved Adventureland.
I did too, actually. I actually loved it.
No, I really did love Adventureland. But yeah, he's got that one by himself.
Okay. Well, we'll have to see what he says next week. Until then, everybody have a good weekend.
Adios.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.